Hi, Dealmakers. Welcome to the show where it's all about financial freedom with real estate. I'm Mary Beth Noonan, a real estate professional and a member of the Michael Blanc team. Are you ready to rethink your investment strategy? We're unpacking the volatility of the stock market versus the steady appeal of real estate. Tune in to learn the secrets to building wealth beyond Wall Street. And Brandon on Amazon gave a shout out. He says, "The plans outlined in this book to acquire multifamily real estate allowed me to understand a path, raise money from investors, put together a team of professionals and advisors, analyze deals, and make offers that have the highest probability of being profitable." If you've read the Yellow Book, leave us a star review on Amazon. We'd love to hear how this information is helping you. And mentoring student John Funderburk raised an estimated $2.5 million for a deal valued at $6.1 million in Charlotte, North Carolina. Well done, John. If you've done a deal, tag us on social media or email us at support@themichaelblanc.com. On this podcast, we dive deep into the strategies that can accelerate your journey towards financial freedom. In today's episode, we're bringing you an exclusive recording from a recent Nighthawk Equity webinar. We explore the fundamental differences between the stock market investments and the world of real estate, examining which might be the better fit for your financial goals. So tune in, take notes, and let's get ready to shift your investment mindset from Wall Street to your street. Let's dive in.
You're listening to the Financial Freedom with Real Estate Investing podcast, hosted by Garrett Lynch and Michael Blanc, where we talk all about how you can achieve financial independence through apartment building investing. Whether you're just starting out or you want to scale your syndication business, this is the show for you.
Okay, welcome to today's show. We're talking all about how to escape Wall Street, how to safely diversify beyond stocks with real estate. We're going to talk about stocks and real estate. And what we're going to talk about here today is what's the better investment, stocks or real estate? And we're going to talk about actually maybe achieving some strategies for achieving optimal diversification and mitigating risk. And then we're going to talk about what we think our outlook is for stocks, bonds, and real estate here today. My name is Michael Blanc. I'm the CEO of Nighthawk Equity. We specialize, of course, in multifamily real estate syndications. So I have a special affinity to that. But today, my guest on the show is Andrew Niffen. Andrew, how's it going?
Good, Michael. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, now you were obviously my partner in Nighthawk, so we specialize in multifamily real estate, but you have a much deeper background on stocks than I do, certainly. So give us a little background maybe on that and kind of maybe what your perspective is, and then we'll kind of dig into the debate.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up around stocks, right? So I grew up in a family where that was part of the dinner table discussion. I literally remember as a kid, like opening up the business section of the paper and reading all of the articles and following all the stocks. I remember as a kid meeting with the broker that managed some of our family's investments and just talking to them about these things. So it was a part of my growing up. And in college, I was a part of a group of students who actually managed $30 million of our college's endowment. And I was in charge of a portion of that portfolio, $3 million of it. And I was literally making investment decisions for the endowment and placing real money in a certain sector. And so we followed these things, talked about them. And I have been a believer and have put a lot of my resources into the stock market over the years. And it's done well for me. And I've read a lot about it. I'm a big believer in it. And over many years, Michael, I've talked to you. And I know that you and I have differing opinions on the wisdom of this sector. And so tonight we're going to have a conversation about the merits of this and how it would fit into one's portfolio. And I'll obviously be bullish on the value of the stock market.
Well, I used to be invested in the stock market. I experienced an IPO through a software company I joined in the late 90s. And in March of 2000, this company called Web Methods went public in March of 2000 and was a paper millionaire and put a bunch of money in my pocket actually after that. And so as every good IPO millionaire does, we give it to, you know, JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs, or in my case, Morgan Stanley. And every month I'm getting these reports. And so I started studying the stock market as well. And then I read Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2005. And it kind of threw me for a loop a little bit because I was getting very little passive income from that. I was getting some interest and dividends from it, but not really passive income like Robert Kiyosaki talks about. And he talks about real estate, of course, and I had very little real estate. And I subsequently quit my job and pursued financial freedom in pursuit of passive income. And I just felt that the stock market was incompatible in my search for passive income. And maybe that's the case, but there is a case for the stocks, of course. But what it did for me is it kind of made me a little more cynical about the stock market. Now, having said that, I invested all my money in restaurants, which sounds like a good idea. And maybe it is. It wasn't for me. I actually subsequently lost my IPO millions in a restaurant debacle and clawed my way back with real estate, flipping houses, and eventually accidentally got into apartment buildings. And today we own $250 million apartment buildings. Nighthawk does, and Drew and Garrett were part of that partnership as well. And it's been an amazing ride. It's a great way to build passive income, of course, wealth. But there are other ways to build wealth. And we're here to kind of compare and contrast stocks and some of those returns and pros and cons with maybe some of the pros and cons of real estate. So with that, state your case, my friend. What is the case
for stocks? All right, let's do this. Stocks? So, Michael, I'm going to talk about why people should stay engaged in Wall Street and why people that are in the ditch the stocks market crowd are wrong, right? So I did a little research going into this call, wanted to be armed with some data. And if you look at the last 200 years of data, that's a large data set, stocks have returned 6.5% to 7% to the investor, right? That's not a huge amount, but it takes into account a lot of good years, a lot of bad years, and it smooths it out. Now, importantly, this is a real return. So it does take into account inflation, right? So if inflation was running at 5% over that 200-year history, then you would see on a piece of paper a 12% returns, right? So these are real returns, and these are real dollars that can really matter to people. So the stock market provides a very rich data set because numbers are published every single day. And, you know, equities are traded very liquidly, so you can see the numbers. The real estate market is a little bit more opaque, so it can be harder to find data on that. But when we looked at the data over a huge volume of time, you see on an inflation-adjusted returns of 7%, a very healthy number. If you simply take that number and you apply it by what we call the rule of 70, right? 7 goes into 70 10 times. So every 10 years, your money doubles in the stock market on average, right? So you just take, you know, $100,000 at 20 years old, and you take that over 5 decades, you can really accrue a nice nest egg based upon this. The other thing I wanted to say is I really, my skin bristles a little bit when people talk about real estate as being a quote unquote hard asset. And when they say that, they're diversifying it or they're comparing it to the stock market and sort of treating the stock market like it's not a hard asset. And I kind of want to push back on that because it's fundamentally false. Investing in real estate and investing in real companies is very similar. They're both what I would call hard assets because they really do produce cash flow. They really do provide value to the economy. They provide a good that is good for people and is needed for our nation to function. And so again, people like to disparage sometimes stocks and corporate equities. I just think it's unfounded. It's not true. Sometimes people ask me, how did we get here? How did we get to the point where stocks are loved and are always promoted? You know, I just said a minute ago to you, Michael, that I grew up just kind of looking at the stock market and reading about it, knowing about it. And it goes back to this picture here that I'm sharing, but it's President Gerald Ford in 1974 signing ERISA, which is a fancy name for the Employee Retirement and Income Savings Act, right? So up until that time, companies provided defined benefits, pensions, where you had guaranteed returns. And times changed. And in 1974, we passed this legislation. And the whole idea was, this is the genesis of when people started doing IRAs, 401ks, and really starting to think that they need to invest on their own for their retirement. And it came out of this legislation that we got the Wolf on Wall Street, the Gordon Geckos of the world, the whole idea of this avatar of a person on Wall Street that was trying to get you to invest. And the reality is that you can invest much more easily in stocks and bonds than you can in real estate. And because you can invest so much more easily in that area, these types of people came into being. These people that call you up on the phone and are always saying to you, you know, stock money away every single month into your 401k and your retirement account. And it built this orthodoxy, this idea that stocks were wise and that bonds were wise and that real estate was sort of for the yahoos over on the side. Of course, I'm not a believer in that at all, right? I help run Nighthawk Equity. And as you said, we manage $250 million of real estate. I wouldn't do that or put all my money in it if I didn't believe in it. But this is how bonds and stocks became the default thing that quote unquote responsible people do, right? So if you look at the history of stocks over time, and I'm just putting on the screen here a chart of stocks over time running from the 1870s, basically the Civil War till now. And if you look at that chart, it is almost a straight line up into the right, a phenomenally consistent return over time, which again corresponds to that first number I gave of a 7% real return. So by no means, when people talk about the stock market being a casino, in my mind, is it warranted by the data? It just doesn't make sense. So again, I think of stocks as being an important part of an investor's portfolio. There's three legs in the stool. There's stocks, there's bonds, which are a more risk-averse, higher on the capital stack investment asset class. And then there's real estate. I think all three of them are important. And I have a lot of my individual retirement in all three, right? So I think real estate has a place. It's a great inflation hedge. But by no means do I think you should be choosing one or the other. It's kind of a false decision. And I really do feel like in the investment in stocks over time, when you're buying good stocks, is a great place to put your money. It's not a casino as we hear so often. So I'll kind of take a pause there, Michael. But those are some of the things I wanted to share with our audience here listening into this presentation, that it doesn't have to be one or the other. You can like chocolate and you can like vanilla ice cream. It's fine to like both. I do put my money where my mouth is and have them in both of those asset classes.
I just like chocolate. So this is a bunch of horse manure, Drew. Honestly, you know, I won't stand for it. I don't care how much data you throw at me. But like 7% return, like that's not interesting to me. Now, you said it was after inflation. Okay, I'll take your word on it. But I think everybody agrees that over time, its stock market returns about 10%. And that 10% does not include inflation. And it does not include taxes, which you have to pay on top of all that. And so 7% return isn't really that interesting. You know, 10% maybe is, but not after taxes. And the other thing you said that, you know, there's a straight line up, and that is true from, I don't know, 1492 to straight line up. But if you zoom in, it's not. I mean, you zoom in on a stock market and it's like, it's a gyrating thing that creates a lot of angst for a lot of different people. And I think one of the things that's been frustrating for me and maybe others is that the volatility is frustrating. I mean, yes, over 20 years, 30 years, it goes up. But let's say you're trying to time, or you're trying to do some financial planning for your family, and you're like, man, I need some money for my stocks. I got a 529 for my kids to go to college. I got a 529, and now they're going to college. Well, if stocks happen to be down 25%, and I got to start liquidating stocks, that's awful. Like, that's not good. Or I'm retiring, and now there's a recession, and now I'm selling at the worst time, but I need the money. And that's frustrating, right? The volatility is frustrating. And that 10% average return, but I studied this, while it's an average return, the volatility actually decimates your returns over time. If you start with $100,000 and it goes up 5%, goes up 7%, goes down 10%, it actually is not an average return of 10%. It's actually somewhere like 7%, 6%, something lower, because the volatility actually ruins your average annual return. So on a short term, the stocks can be going wildly up or wildly down or wildly sideways. And that's what I don't like about it. Now, you said that stocks are a hard asset. I don't know. They're a derivative of a hard asset. Like, they're an approximation of something that actually exists. That's what I think. You know, I think it's not a hard asset. I think it's a derivative of a hard asset. But be that as it may, doesn't really matter. One of the things I like about real estate, there's two things I like about it, possibly three. But I like the fact that there's cash flow. A lot of reasons that people invest in real estate, which is why Robert Kiyosaki wrote the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, is for cash flow. And there's very few things on earth that actually generate cash flow. And that is US-based real estate. Nowhere else in the world can I buy real estate, get a loan for it, and pay my expenses, put money in my pocket, and then number two, get real estate benefits. So cash flow, yes, you can get cash flow with stocks, I'm sure. Okay. But if the average stock investor is not getting a 6% cash on cash return, unless you're seeking out specific stocks, you're a sophisticated investor and you're buying stocks specifically for their high dividends. I don't know who does that. Okay. Maybe some do. Fair enough. Maybe some do, you know, but the average American, okay, here's what they do. They call up their financial advisor, or worse, they have their 401k and they auto allocate their money across some. There's like four things you can choose. You can have aggressive all the way. And so they click this thing and it's just a bunch of stuff. And that thing does not generate cash flow. It's certainly not intentionally. So I like real estate because it generates cash flow. Also, when you sell stocks and your broker loves to buy and sell, every time you buy and sell, you're paying fees. Okay, that's super irritating. But when I sell at a loss, finally, I'm like, yes, I made some money. Now I got to be capital gains taxes on it. With real estate, if you play your cards right, you actually have major tax advantages because the government wants you to invest in real estate and provide housing for people. And same thing with oil exploration. They incentivize that heavily with taxes. So you actually get tax benefits. You have depreciation. You can offset your gains. If you play your cards right, you can do a 1031 exchange and actually defer taxes almost forever. You can't do that with stocks. So I don't like that either. And then a third, while stocks do go up and down and you claim it's a real asset, I didn't see stocks going up a lot during the inflation. No, in fact, I saw stocks and Bitcoin, of course, which is correlated, go down while inflation was raging. At the same time, while inflation was raging, okay? And I get my dates straight, but inflation started raging in sometime, I think, April of 21, if I get it right. And the Fed didn't start increasing rates until almost a year later. During that time, as you well know, rents in this country skyrocketed 20%, 25%. And the valuations of our real assets, hard assets, went through the roof. We sold stuff within 18 months at staggering valuations. Why? Because inflation drove the rents up. And so therefore, I view that real estate is kind of an inflation hedge. If inflation continues to go up, which I think it will, therefore rents will continue going up, and therefore the value of real estate will go up as well. So for me, this is really why I like real estate, Drew.
If you want to work with a full-time syndicator to help you get up to speed faster, get your first deal done this year, and scale your portfolio so you can quit your job, then check out our mentoring program. It's at themichaelblank.com/mentor. It's the only program out there that actually guarantees results. That's right. We actually guarantee that you do your first deal in the first year. Otherwise, we'll keep working with you and set up a strategy session call and explore whether it's right for you. It's themichaelblank.com/mentor.
Yeah. So I respond to a couple of things there. I mean, first of all, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I will differ from you on a couple of those things, right? So real estate and stocks work together in the tax code, right? Because they're both passive investments, right? So the tax code is split into active income and passive income, right? And so if I have passive gains and passive losses, those things can be offset against one another. So if I have passive losses in real estate because I have lots of depreciation, they can offset my passive gains from my stocks. So they work together. They're not at odds with one another in the investing side. They are teammates, not competitors there. You talked about while inflation was raging. Yeah, while inflation was raging, we put rents up a lot and values increased tremendously. That was a great time for real estate. I totally agree. I'll say at the same time, the stock market has been on a tear in the last 24 months and it's really high right now. So it's done phenomenally well and been very durable beyond even what most forecasters expected when rates got pushed really high. That's a great thing to see. I'd also just say, you really need to divide your thoughts on the stock market between people that are traders and people that are fundamental investors, right? And you can divide that up by people that want to kind of get in and out of certain equities on a weekly or monthly basis that hit some sort of price target and get out, between people that, in contrast to people that are just finding fundamentally good businesses. And as you said before, I've heard you say this, it's like real estate. We want to find fundamentally good properties and have them for a long time. In that sense, stocks are no different, right? We don't want to go in and out of an apartment building in 1 month. We want to buy it, push value into it, let time do its thing, and get appreciation. Same thing is true in the stock market, right? So I always say, I borrow this from Warren Buffett, right? But in the short term, the stock market is a casino. Totally true. In the long term, it will weed out good companies and good places to allocate capital from bad companies. That's fundamentally its job, and it does it pretty darn well. So I think that they work together more than they're at odds with one another.
You make a good point, as cynical as I am with the stock market. And I did study the asset allocation of ultra and high net worth individuals. Here's kind of what I found, to kind of put it up on the screen here. The observation around these ultra high net worth investors, that they have almost half of their money in alternative investments. So now they invest less than 30% domestic international equities. Okay, so 30%. By comparison, the average investor, and this is maybe the lesson here, by comparison, the average investor typically has 50% to 90% of their portfolio invested in stocks. So maybe your point is well taken, that they both have a portion in our portfolio. But if you study the ultra net worth investors, these are investors worth $30 million or more, they can typically afford better financial advisors, maybe even family offices. And this is what they're doing. So I think this is interesting. They have almost 50% in alternatives, and they have 9% in national equities and 29% in domestic. So it's about 30% in equities versus the average, like I said, is much, much, much higher. I just think, and just looking back at my own history here, I think the average investor is lazy. Now, I quote myself because I did not care about it. I just gave the money to my financial advisor, and that financial advisor basically managed the money and kept sending me updates and statements. And frankly, they were getting their fees regardless of whether marketing was going up or not. And it kind of irritated me a little bit. And the ultra high net worth are doing something else. They're going into alternatives. And so let's maybe talk about alternatives a little bit more. And real estate clearly is an alternative investment. There are certainly others. There are certain precious metals. There's oil and gas. There's actual hard assets like buying a franchise, for example, or buying a farm, or, you know, coffee farm in Costa Rica, that kind of stuff. And so these ultra net worth investors somehow are putting more of their portfolio into these alternative investment classes.
You're right. You're right. I mean, it is true that people that are ultra high net worth have a different diversification than other people. I think one of the things that's almost undemocratic about this whole process is the whole idea of accredited investors, right? So to invest in certain asset classes or certain investments, you must be accredited. And, you know, there's a complicated formula for that, but fundamentally means you need to be pretty wealthy. And once you are somewhat wealthy, you do have access to advisors, whether those be lawyers or accountants or merely financial advisors, that can help allocate your dollars into some of these alternative assets. And what you and I have been trying to do, as you know, with our entire partnership at Nighthawk Equity, is in a sense democratize these alternative assets and bring them to the people who might not otherwise be aware of them. Because as I said a little bit ago, there's a whole industry of Wall Street that has billions of dollars of financial advisors that are constantly calling a normal person with a job and saying, if you're responsible, you only put your money in stocks and bonds, because that whole Wall Street machine wants to get their fees off of you putting money monthly into their IRAs, into their 401ks. And I'm not saying that that's the only thing you should do. I'm saying it's a part of it, right? Alternative assets do make sense. And up until recently, it was phenomenally difficult for the average person to put their money into alternative assets, not just legally. It was difficult to do legally, but it was also kind of frowned upon. You were sort of like the strange person at the Thanksgiving table if you were putting money into real estate or energy exploration. And I think that that's crazy. Like, you and I have tried with the whole Nighthawk team to share with people the good news, in a sense, about alternative assets, right? Very important. I just want to say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's my message.
You made a statement earlier, it's easier to invest in stocks and it's harder to invest in real estate, which actually is traditional true, but you make a good point. How does the average person get access to alternative investments? You know, typically back in with my financial advisor, it was pre-IPO, venture capital kind of thing. You had to be super, you know, in some kind of inside track to get in there. And maybe that's the advantage alternate net worth have is this inside track. But what we've been doing through real estate syndications is actually bring that to the average person, right? If you want to own a sliver of a $40 million apartment building, you can. It's a legal security that's being sold. It's through a private placement memorandum and, you know, approved by the SEC, it's essentially. And so now an average person can invest in real estate without having to manage themselves and the complexities of that. And that's really cool because now you can get into an asset class. Now you might get into a REIT. People say, oh, I'll just get into a REIT, but the REIT is so big, And there's so many fees in there, okay? It behaves a little bit more, like I said, a derivative. This is what I'm saying. A REIT to me is a derivative. It's not a hard asset. When you're investing directly in an apartment building, you're investing in that apartment building, in the actual hard asset. You know that your money is going in there to purchase it, to renovate it. And I think that's really cool. And the cool thing about alternative investments, especially syndications, is you can get involved in a variety of syndications. There are oil and gas exploration syndications. You can buy a bunch of ATMs in syndications, car washes in syndications, and things of that nature. So syndications, to me, is awesome. The first syndication in real estate was the Empire State Building. That's how that thing was built. It was the tallest structure at the time, and it was built with private individuals funding that thing. I think it's the coolest thing. And then you get these reports and you get to see the pictures of what's happening and you get reports. I think it's magical. So maybe what I'm hearing you say is maybe there's a place for both in a portfolio.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that there is a place for both of these asset classes in the portfolio. What I would tell someone to be cautious about, if we can sort of turn the page a little bit, is in asset classes that you might want to avoid, right? And so I'd say, again, one of the things that really was fundamental in my shaping my philosophy on these things was something that the dean of my business school said. He said, you want to work at companies or own companies that provide goods and services to society. And the goods that you provide should be good, and the services should serve people, right? And so when we're investing, we want to invest in apartment buildings or businesses that provide good goods and services that serve. And by that metric, I would say, and I'm gonna offend some people, but I don't mind, right? I'm gonna say, how good is gold? And how good is Bitcoin? And who does that serve? And what does it really produce for society, right? I know that apartment buildings are going to serve a very core function of society. We need to put roofs over people's head. There will always be a need for that. People would much rather be under a roof than out on a street. That's a very real good. When I look at Bitcoin, when I look at gold, it doesn't really do anything, and it doesn't spit off cash flow over time. It's something that has some abstract ethereal value, but doesn't really contribute to society in a way that good companies do, and in a way that great apartment buildings do. So for me, that's a dividing line. It's sort of like a fundamental line that I will sort of draw the line on. And I don't know if everyone agrees with that, but that's kind of how I feel about these investments and ones that I would really caution people on strongly.
My takeaway from reading Rich Dad Poor Dad is that one has to be open to alternative investments. I think they serve, each type of alternative investment serves a particular purpose. And I think just going in with one asset class is probably not a good idea, right? So what do you want to do? Do you want to generate cash flow? Maybe you should look at real estate, right? Do you want long-term wealth and appreciation? You might look at stocks, safety, bonds, cash, certainly. Right? You can argue over gold, inflation hedge, perhaps. I don't know what purpose Bitcoin sends. Then I'm sure maybe it's in people's portfolio. But the point is being more intentional with your wealth, not just delegating it to your financial advisor and letting him or her take care of it. I think that's the biggest fundamental mistake. So right. What advice maybe do we have with someone who's interested more in learning more alternative investments, maybe even about real estate? What can they do to kind of, you know, dip their toe in the water?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So I remember hearing this once when I was young and never forgetting it. And the statement was, no one's going to look after your money like you will. Right. And so that's a cautionary tale against just giving it all to some financial advisor and letting him or her take care of it, because they're just going to stuff it into something simple and not really look after it well. If you do want to look after it well, you know, we'd encourage someone to look at, obviously, some of the opportunities that we offer. We labor and strive day after day at Nighthawk Equity to provide really quality opportunities for people. So most of our opportunities are in apartment buildings because we believe in that so much. I'd encourage anyone to take a look at our website, www.nighthawkequity.com. And there you can book a call to talk with us and talk. We have to chat with you guys through all of these ideas. They're obviously very complex. We have ideas. We live, eat, and breathe this, Michael. And obviously, we really enjoy talking about it. And I'd be happy to share with people some of our opportunities, as well as our thoughts on how they can manage their wealth well.
Yeah, nighthawkequity.com is our website. And there's actually a blog on there. And we have a YouTube channel. And there's a really cool download called The Complete Guide to Real Estate Syndications. So if you want to learn more about real estate syndications, it really addresses the top questions you might have around getting involved in these things. And definitely encourage you to do that, to download. It's a PDF. And then, like I said, we'd love to have a conversation with you. So just open up your minds to these alternative investments. And real estate certainly is one of them, but look at others. Look at other ones we mentioned here on the show as well. So, hey, Drew, thanks so much. I appreciate being on the show. And yeah, and we can find more about us at nighthawkequity.com.
Thanks, Michael. Glad to be here.
To find out more about partnering or investing in a multifamily deal, please email us at info@thenighthawkequity.com.
Thanks for listening. Take the next step toward financial freedom by enrolling in the number one apartment investing course on the market. The Apartments 101 Masterclass will give you proven strategies to buy your first apartment building with no money down. Sign up for free lifetime access to learn how to close your first deal in as little as 180 days. Head over to apartments101.co to start your free training. That's apartments101.co.